and others who see this community as not having any room for a homeless encampment, not having any room for homeless people unless they follow the time-honored Rodkin Kennedy dictum of hide out or get out. And that, of course, is something that a number of us don't feel is fair or true, even, and that we want to change. And again, I'm hoping that we can get together and begin that process in a more active and particular way at the summit. But Tent City, well, it was originally Tent City, called itself Camp Dignity, and then became Dignity Village in Portland, sent an email to me, and I wanted to kind of give you some selections from that email. And this kind of is interesting. It talks about Dignity Village and its relationship to other social service agencies and projects. And I'm going to read you a little bit about it. This is March 26th. That's a response. Yes, Dan, Dignity is the bastard child of care providers, among other agencies in the, quote, continuum of the community of care. We're given short shrift by most of the rest of the services who deal with the problem, and the city, who charges us rent, $2,222 per month, for the privilege of living on a wet asphalt lot on the edge of town, where it's harder to get to our jobs. Five of us now work at the Saturday market, setting up and taking down tents, which requires we start work between 3 and 6, and therefore have to stay in town and sleep out in order to work, and services. But hey, what do we know about the problem? We're only formerly homeless people who have managed to find a viable solution to our dilemma. What do we know? Homelessness is a growing problem that the government finds intractable and can only spend taxpayers' money on maintaining while watching the problem mushroom and grow. Scattered site camping with all its attendant problems and the criminalization of the poor is the traditional and only, quote, solution to the problem that the city offers apart from the care providers that already exist. You surely noticed in that city council session, he's talking about Portland, Oregon, that much of the talk centered on budgetary restraint, that there's no more money to build more shelters, and so no room at the inn, that existing agencies are lucky to get the funding they get. You're right that John was quite diplomatic in his testimony when he spoke of Dignity having an agreement with the city, and JP's testimony I thought quite good, restrained, but honest and respectful. I was so surprised by the whole spectacle that I said nothing at all. And what's interesting here is that you have folks who are working on encampments up there, who are living in encampments, and we're living in Dignity Village, working very strongly on in the political arena, and having a kind of keeping a close eye on what's going on in the political front. And I think that's what we need to do down here in Santa Cruz as well. The Camp Paradise folks can't be satisfied that they've got theirs and then to sort of proceed to work on their own project alone. If they're going to, I think even if they're going to survive in a meaningful way, they have to, you know, they have to step into the activist arena somewhat. And this is really the first time I've said this in this particular way. I've often made the point that here in Santa Cruz, Camp Paradise is not really a bunch of activists. It's a bunch of folks who just want to survive and who are, you know, doing what they need to do to survive. And I've appreciated that, and I think that's certainly true. But I think, ironically, survival is tied up with activism. Survival is tied up with expanding and forming contacts with other people and forming a stronger union, or else you die, or else the project dies, or it becomes sidelined, or simply the purview of the very, very few. And maybe I've been watching too many movies about the about Delano and the 60s and Cesar Chavez's United Farm Workers Union, and how they started in a very small way, and then the only way they could survive, the only way they could really win their struggle of decent living conditions in the fields was to expand essentially not just beyond Delano to the state, but to the whole nation and internationally, to use a great boycott to force the major growers to form reasonable contracts with them and to recognize their union. And I think in Santa Cruz, similarly, simply going after your own private group's interests is not good enough and eventually will not serve you. And I understand why it is done, but I think we have to expand more broadly. And it's hard. It's a hard thing because you talk to folks who were living in their vehicles, and I know that when I was trying to help folks organize homes on wheels locally, we talked to folks, and they were saying, we don't want to be targeted. We, you know, we don't want to be a part of a group that the city is going to come down on. And that, of course, is always true. It's true in any civil rights struggle. And that's one of the issues, of course, we're going to be talking about. How do you avoid that stigmatization? And what can you do to respond to it so that you aren't essentially terrified into submission? And I think what we found at City Council in the last two meetings is the one way to respond to it is to simply resist it and then begin to realize that you have broader support than you thought before, because people feel that standing up to unjust authority is as American as apple pie and is really necessary, particularly in these times of endless war and the expansion of the government and the military state here that we have happening nationally. And I think that there are local ramifications to that, too. So you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and I'm your host, Robert Norris. This is going to be rolling at you for the next 2.5 hours. Here's a story that actually is a couple weeks old. It's almost a month old. March 4th, in the Chronicle Street Sweep, Arcata tempers tough love with homeless services. Not long ago, the downtown square of this little university community looked a lot like San Francisco's Halliday Plaza. Squalid, dirty, swarming with the homeless and the transient. The fine, unbigoted writer of this story, by the way, is a man named Glenn Martin, the Chronicle staff writer. Young, dreadlocked, free spirits smoked joints and lolled with their dogs on the grass. Weathered graybeards chugged from paper bags and raved or cursed as whim dictated. Everyone, young and old, cadged for spare change. Garbage and dog feces littered the area. But things are different now. A few transients wander past the margins of the plaza, but none linger. The trash is gone. Unlike other politically progressive Northern California towns, such as Berkeley, Santa Cruz, and San Francisco, Arcata has made dramatic progress in addressing its homeless problem through a combination of significant services to the needy, tougher ordinances on quality of life crimes, and beefed up police presence. I interrupt briefly to say this is, of course, the New York Giuliani line that you use harassment to get the homeless out, and then you cover it with some services, which, for example, was used in Berkeley when they passed a whole mass of anti-homeless laws back in 1994. I'm hoping to get an actual response to this article from Arcata by activists up there, maybe in the next show or two, but this is the establishment line we're running at you. The measures implemented in Arcata are similar in many ways to a controversial plan being promoted by San Francisco Supervisor Gavin Newsom and could foreshadow the city's future if Newsom gets his way. Among other measures, Newsom's plan would prohibit begging on street medians and freeway ramps, track and fingerprint homeless residents using city services, seize shopping carts from street people, toughen requirements for service providers, and expand homeless services and outreach. The plan has engendered a good deal of controversy in San Francisco, and there seems little chance of passage under the current Board of Supervisors, many of whom view the scheme as heartless and draconian. But in Arcata, the tough love is already in effect. Basically, we've cracked down on illegal conduct, blocking sidewalks, public drunkenness, drug use or sales, illegal camping, littering, relieving oneself in public, dog in areas where they shouldn't be, said Randall Mendoza, a lieutenant with the Arcata Police Department. Of course, the question here is there shelter space or camping space or housing space for the folks that are outside? And if there isn't, what do they expect people to do? Leave town or hide out? And this is the basic issue that cities throughout the country is not addressing, and that this kind of rhetoric doesn't address. You won't see any stats here about the numbers of Arcata shelters or the numbers of homeless in Arcata. Those little figures are just not mentioned. This isn't a homeless issue. True, a lot of the people committing these violations are defined as homeless, but it's ultimately about crime. The crime of being poor. Historically, residents of this town dominated by Humboldt State University have been very tolerant of the homeless. But that goodwill has eroded over the years as the transient population has grown, ultimately dominating the downtown center. And here in Arcata, population 17,000, has 100 to 300 homeless people depending on the season. The ratio of homeless to sheltered residents in Arcata is about 1 to 170 during the winter and as high as 1 to 55 in the summer months. By comparison, the ratio in San Francisco is about 1 to 122 year-round. Different groups perceived the situation from different perspectives, but most people perceived it as a significant problem, said Michael Benny, executive director of the Arcata Downtown Business Community, a store owners association. Mothers with children and the elderly were frightened by the aggressive panhandling, Benny said. Health department officials were concerned by the dog waste. For store owners around the square, the illegal activity made transacting business difficult. While the current low number of transients in Arcata's streets can be attributed in part to the weather, officials said tougher laws and extra officers on the beat have played a significant role. In January 2001, the city beefed up ordinances on public misconduct and extended them from the plaza proper to the entire downtown core. New ordinances forbidding loitering, which is nationally unconstitutional, and blocking sidewalks were also enacted. The city council also put more police officers on the municipal payroll, including one who works the plaza full-time. As homeless people have been rousted from the plaza, some have moved to Arcata's 600-acre forested community park, but police are beginning to crack down there, too. In 2001, said Mendoza, officers made 44, quote, contacts with homeless people in regard to the loitering and sidewalk blocking ordinances. Many contacts resulted in citations. In general, Arcata's homeless tend to keep moving since extended loitering now draws police attention. So the right to assemble is apparently a dead letter in Arcata. A good many congregate at Arcata's Excellent Services Center. The tougher city ordinances and increased police presence have met, perhaps exceeded expectations, Benny said. Last year at this time, you'd always see 20 or 30 homeless hanging around the plaza, he said. This year, it's 6 or 7 at most, and if they engage in illegal behavior, it's quickly addressed. Reactions to the crackdown among Arcata's homeless people range from glum resignation to rage. One of the angrier street people is Lawrence Wood, Lawrence Wood V, known widely by his handle Moon Raven. The police are becoming more and more hostile, said Wood, a weathered 40-year-old who has spent 22 years on the road. Somebody better tell them to back off or there's going to be a war. They think that getting arrested intimidates us. They're wrong. For us, it just means a warm place to sleep and 3 squares a day. Nevertheless, most of Arcata's homeless people seem disinclined to tangle with the police. They generally give the plaza a wide berth, and they seldom loiter when they chance to pass through it. The one place transients congregate is the town service center run by Arcata Endeavor, an advocacy group. It's easy to see why. Located adjacent to a Greyhound bus station a couple of blocks from the plaza, the center is clean, well-lighted, and welcoming, and probably not harassed by police, one of the few places in town. Little interjection. Endeavor's center, in fact, might be the carrot that makes the law enforcement stick work. Started in 1998 with a $500,000 federal grant, Endeavor provides food, amenities, and counseling and arranges for shelter beds and motel rooms in nearby Eureka. While there's no permanent shelter for the chronically indigent in the Arcata Eureka area, homeless advocates have received federal funding for a large multi-service complex in Eureka that would contain 40 beds. But the problem is finding a site that is acceptable to town residents. Administrators at the Endeavor Center say the town's tough love approach treats the symptoms of homelessness but does not address the root causes. It makes the problem go away. It doesn't solve the problem, said Carla Ritter, the center's director. Arcata is not the most hospitable place in the world. Resources are limited in a community of this size, and we can't save the world. The ordinances were an attempt to address at least some of the most pressing issues. To the extent that Arcata has made some positive changes for the city's homeless, Ritter said, it's because a neighborhood approach is emphasized. Community involvement and a lack of bureaucratic red tape may account for the fact that Arcata seems to get much more bang for its homeless buck than San Francisco. And there's more to the story, but I'm realizing that one should edit these things before one reads them on the air, and I apologize. This is a piece by the San Francisco Chronicle, which is fundamentally a supportive piece for the policies of supervisor, San Francisco supervisor Gavin Newsom, who has, as was mentioned, plans to harass homeless people who are doing signing on medians and cut back the amount of money that they're provided with general assistance. And essentially, it's essentially a kind of a, they call it tough love, but I don't see where the love is in this program. It is there's no meaningful expansion of any kind of services that would allow people, for example, the most basic and elementary thing, like a place to sleep. Instead, it's the get-out-of-town approach. And that's nothing new. That's really something that happens quite regularly in a lot of cities. And it's something that I'm hoping that on May 3rd and 4th, we can find more effective ways of fighting, because I think that a lot of people in a lot of these cities, even folks who live in houses, even folks, you know, who are not necessarily terribly liberal on all issues, believe in basic rights for people and prosecuting real crime, not harassing people who are poor because they're poor and because the city wants to set up a new gated community approach to things. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3. Let's listen to a little poetry. Or money.
Just like a tree standing by the water, we shall not be moved. We're fighting for our freedom, we shall not be moved. We're fighting for our freedom, we shall not be moved. Just like a tree standing by the water, we shall not be moved. We shall not, we shall not be moved. We shall not, we shall not be moved. Just like a tree standing by the water, we shall not be moved. We're black and white together, we shall not be moved. Black and white together, we shall not be moved. Just like a tree standing by the water, we shall not be moved. We shall not be moved. We shall not be moved. Just like a tree standing by the water, we shall not be moved. Fighting for our children, we shall not be moved. We're fighting for our children, we shall not be moved. Just like a tree standing by the water, we shall not be moved. We shall not be moved. We shall not be moved. Just like a tree standing by the water, we shall not be moved.
And that was David Rovix from his Payday at Coal Creek album. Poetic, but not poetry. That was music. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And I'm Robert Norse. We've got the second hour, and as promised on our email blurb, if you get it on the email, we've got some yuppie planter yipping coming up. As the writer has it, hippie planter is gone but not forgotten as tempers flare around yuppie planter. And actually, that's what we're going to hear now. This is a tape that I recorded just before the Thursday show. I do a Thursday show from 6 to 8 on Free Radio in the evenings. And right before then, I went to what I call Yuppie Planter, the planter area in front of New Leaf Market on Pacific Avenue, downtown Santa Cruz, next to, I guess, Soquel abuts it on one side and Lincoln on the other. And that's the area that's been fenced in by the order of the Santa Cruz City Council in January through funding with your taxpayer dollars, as I understand it, to give more space to Sushi Now, and Alibaba's Cafe, two green kiosks, that two businesses that have been in the area for a number of years. And it's kind of interesting because there's the area apparently is not only never full, but usually not even half full, and it's just sort of a large obstruction on the sidewalk where this green fenced-in area has a lot of tables that take up half of what was once a broad kind of community gathering area. And, of course, police have made it a point, encouraged by Alibaba's owner, Ali Ka, and Sushi Now's owner, Matisse Selman, to harass those who enter the forbidden zone, the gated area, their own private business where only businesses, where only their customers and their friends can go. And I wanted to check this out because the question was, what was going to happen once this fence came up? The young people, like, you might say, like Camp Paradise folks, are not really, you know, big-time activists and don't want to spend their lives fighting for civil rights. They want to just, you know, have the same reasonable rights we all are entitled to. And one thought that they were going to move along. They tried to go across the street to the Pacific Cookie Company, and then the tables, or I should say the benches, were taken out there. And they pretty much migrated, many of them, back to the area on the edges of Yuppie Planter. So you now have the yuppies in their own sort of cage in there. And on the edges you have younger people, counterculture folks, skateboarders, goths, things of that sort, folks of that sort there. Anyway, I went back to get some interviews, and this is what I found. That is dead air. Having a little mic problem here. Let me just quickly go back and see what our difficulty is. Occasionally have these little glitches here at Free Radio. It was working before, so I'm not quite sure what the problem is. In case you want to call in, by the way, throughout any of this, the phone number is 427-3772. And I'm going to try to cue up this tape again in our trusty studio equipment. Yeah. Let's give it a try. Well, we're definitely having a taping problem here in terms of playing our audio tapes, so I will have to proceed and do a little crash work here in the studio. Stay with us. Don't go away. We are definitely going to be continuing and hopefully correcting this minor problem.
And the national anthem thereof, and the listless shuffle I am making in going out to check the junk mail. And I am an armchair revolutionary smacking on another tug of good weed and thinking to myself, we are going to smash the state and save the poor and the alienated from the corporate liberalism eating away at the foundations of the world as a giant morphine worm oozes up from the bottom of the world and sucks out the brains of entire civilizations to the point that politics is going to be meaningless in little more than 50 years anyway. But I am an armchair revolutionary, and I am giving myself credit for even that, knowing that there is nothing big business swine can do to save themselves from these falling mountains of addiction and murder and AIDS and crack babies and teenage rumbles and peons in Colombia working for a quarter a day for the drug lord, my savior. For I am an armchair revolutionary, and I utilize each and every aspect of civilization for my own revolutionary ends, applying art into an excremental purging of bile and phlegm, buying real estate and planning to turn it all over to the communist Chinese. and there is a bazooka under my bed already.
I want to rob you for your riches, take back the land you stole, stop the poor from being poor, but you know that ain't happening no more. I want to walk up to Capitol Hill, scream out your name, and let all my people know that you ain't got no game. I want to organize against you, get all my folks together, and come at your ass like some icy weather. Turn your prisons into schools, your corporations into homes, so that all my people will be finally free to go. I want to educate the people and let it be known that we have an evil man on the prowl. You heard? We have an evil man on the prowl. He looks like Proposition 21, dressed to impress you and report to youth crime. He sounds like Proposition 227, talking no more bilingual education. It's about time. He steps on toes with his big cowboy boots called welfare reform and calls out, if you want to live, you need to conform. I want to make my own most wanted list for the crimes against the people, and when we catch him, we ain't making any deals. I am trying to understand, who am I? I am the one you kicked out of school because I fought too much. I'm the one you locked up and said I couldn't be rehabilitated, and instead ended up being isolated. I am a Mexicana who was born on stolen land and then called American, but don't have equal rights, and my mother doesn't have a good job. I am the one who will fight for justice.
I pass a woman asleep in an avenue doorway, and I think she looks like my mother. Something about the slope of her shoulders, the tangle of dark brown hair tossed over her navy bedroll. For a moment, it is 30 years ago, and this is my mother, dirty fingernails clutching at her forearms as she tries to block the cold breath of morning. My mother reaching into her sleeping bag for her paper-swaddled bottle of wine. My mother rubbing oozing eyes that refuse to open, stuck fast against the thin razors of light. I can almost remember the way wine burns the throat, heat panging away against so much cold, seeping into thin, anemic blood, and I taste iron. I can feel the blistered corners of her mouth split as she repeats, "Spare change, sir, spare change, ma'am, spare change," like an old song, the words vibrate against my cheeks. I wonder if memory is coded into our cells, shards of the past in our hair, in our fingernails, in these moments when we can see the ash-gray sky at 6 a.m. on a morning when we were only pin dots buried in the folds of some woman's abdomen. I whisper, "I love you," to the lady in the doorway and continue down the avenue, warming my numb red hands against the growing fire of sunrise.
And thanks to the timely technical assistance of the V-Man, we're going to be back on track with Showdown at Yuppie Planter. That was the Poe Poets Project, and you were listening to a couple of cuts. Let's see, I think that was Coded by Danny Montgomery. But let's turn now to Santa Cruz, downtown Pacific Avenue, and the long-awaited...
So it's March 28th, 2002, about 5:15 in the afternoon. We're approaching Yuppie Planter, which has four people sitting at its 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 tables. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21 or so chairs, barricaded, of course, as usual, by green fences. And it's the usual situation.
Boycott Sushi Now now and Alibaba's Cafe now. Return these spaces to public use. Not just for the rich, not just for private business owners, but for everyone. Public spaces for everyone, not just for two merchants who have blocked off half the sidewalk. Public spaces for everyone, end the discrimination against poor people here in Santa Cruz, the attack on young and homeless people, the driving away of a whole class of people from the downtown area. Don't spend your dollars at Alibaba's Cafe and Sushi Now. and New Leaf Market. Spend your money at places that respect civil rights for everyone.
You're disturbing my peace.
Sorry to hear it.
So why don't you shut up?
Because I got something to say.
Well, we're trying to have a conversation here.
Well, have your conversation.
Don't be yelling in our conversation.
Boycott Sushi Now and Alibaba's Cafe. Don't do business with bigotry. Boycott businesses that discriminate against poor people. Carmel has plenty of places to go where poor people can't go. Hey, sir.
I was walking around with the tape recorder.
So what's up to? What's up to?
Hey, I heard you made a fool of yourself in court again.
Well, it's not true.
That's true.
It's a lie.
They're being spread by my opponents.
I've been
told that you are grandstanding again.
Well, I'm a grand guy. I'm standing. I'm still standing.
And you don't want to work with anybody political because you're on your own egotistical, eccentric, young anarchists association league or something. I don't know. I get it all mixed up, but I get it from the streets. So a lot of times the grapevine is a little twisted and muddled. Let's go off record here for a minute.
Actually, that's a good point. We have here the same city-funded classical music that's blasting out over the planter here, the yuppie planter.
The Harleys.
And, it's obvious they're doing a great bunch of business here because they got three people in this entire area,
It's shaping up, dude. I mean, it's shaping up.
It's ridiculous. If these two businesses has agreed to actually reasonably deal with the community instead of just fencing off this area, it would be so much better.
I'm not talking
to you. I'm talking to anybody listening.
Don't even turn this thing on, man. That's too nuts. I'm going to go to the Pacific Cookie Company. Let's adjourn to a secret meeting here.
Right. Well, actually, I'm on the air in about 15 minutes, so you have a good cookie.
Good luck.
All right.
Why do you disturb the peace of guests of Santa Cruz from across the country walking around talking to yourself? They find it very offensive.
I find this whole thing very offensive. I find walling off this area very offensive. I'm sorry. That is offensive. And when you talk about it, some people don't like that idea, but I'm afraid it has to be discussed.
But you don't have to be offensive.
I think that you have to be loud enough for people to be heard.
But you don't have to be loud enough to disturb other people's peace of mind.
I hear your point of view, but I disagree with you on this issue.
Thank you, Robert.
You're welcome.
You're such a cutie.
Thank you. So, we have...
What are you going to do about that, Robert?
Hey, I'm not the business that controls this area, Matisse. Why don't you do something about it? Call the police. Do a ticket. Isn't that your normal deal these days?
You sue the city over everything, Robert.
You're the one who does the backdoor deals on these, backdoor deals. In 3 days, you have this area fenced off.
And I'm now talking with Matisse Selman, who is the owner of Sushi Now. That's the other voice you're hearing.
Could not use it unless they're your customers or unless you like them. So unless they are your friends, they can't be in this area. That's not Santa Cruz oriented, Matisse. That's not open to the public. That's bad. I'm sorry, you were saying?
You can't see the trees from the forest anymore, and you know it. You're a bastard, Robert, and I'm done with you. I really am.
At this point, Matisse Selman grabbed my tape recorder and took it into his booth and held it there and challenged me to call the police and have him arrested if I wanted to. And I asked him if I could use his phone. And eventually I persuaded him to give me back my tape recorder. And unfortunately, during that period of time, I think he turned it off. So you can't hear much of that dialogue. But you hear some of the dialogue ensuing.
Call the police.
The police officer here, this man has just taken my tape recorder. This man has stolen my tape recorder. Give it back, Matisse.
It's 5:20. Give it back. I won't.
Okay, it's about 5:22. Matisse has returned the tape recorder. I actually was trying to give you an opportunity, Matisse, to speak about the issue from your perspective. That's why I put it up to your face.
You twist everything around.
I play incomplete. Hey, everything you say will go on the air. So if you want to call in, you can speak. Don't give me this bullshit. You want to go on the air, you can. Nobody's twisting anything around. You're the man with the money who fenced off this area.
What money? Where's my money?
It's coming in every day. Hey, why did you privatize this area, Matisse? It's bad. It's bad. It has denied people a place to be in a public space.
Why don't you be honest and talk to the people that really hate
I'm being honest. You're the one who has taken up half the sidewalk. You and Alibaba.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know who was taking up all the sidewalk? Mm-hmm. There's all the deadbeats around here that are sitting around selling drugs and stuff.
That's right.
And it looks a lot nicer now, and I feel like I belong here now, and like I can walk up and down without somebody soliciting to sell me drugs.
You won't play that on the radio.
No, it'll
be played on the radio tonight. You're a liar, Matisse. It'll be played on the radio tonight. Stop your bullshit. You know every time that I interview you, it goes on the radio. So
yeah.
Save me your bullshit.
That show bullshit. Becky put together, huh?
What show?
Yeah, where you take the clips. Who knows?
So anything else happening around here? I mean, is there anything you want to say for the radio, Matisse? This is your opportunity. If you want to say anything, go ahead.
I'm not going to be put on the spot like this, Robert.
All right, well, think about it. If you got a statement you want to make, call in half an hour. You know when the show is.
For a living. I cook for a living, right?
No, you fence off the sidewalk for a living and you deny public space for a living. That's what you do.
Everybody else who has businesses down here who fence it off for their, you know, businesses. What's that about? I mean, why aren't you down there doing something about
that?
Because
this was done specifically to get rid of a bunch of people here, and you know that as well as I do, or you should.
The people that hung out here knew it was a problem. They even admitted it.
And we tried to deal with that problem, Matisse. We tried to do it, and you wouldn't get involved. Instead, you went to the council, and you cut off half the sidewalk. That's what you did.
Why don't you talk to those people that are here every day?
I do.
And what do they say now, Robert? They've
well,
completely changed their opinion.
So what's your opinion these
He's
days?
He's not one that hangs out here every day.
Oh, I'll go over and talk to them, okay? Will you be happy then?
You select people that choose your side, and that's what you play on the radio.
I'm going to play you tonight on the radio.
Of course you will.
And I'm going to play this fellow here who takes, I believe, your side on this
issue.
Well,
I mean, I just see certain things, you know. I mean, I think if these people respected, you know, people like Matisse's space and stuff, this would have never came to this. But it was kind of like something you had to get a designated area in order to be able to let people know that that's what this area is for eating. But these people did not do that, ask time and time again. I've always been a silent, you know, person just sitting around listening to it all. And I've seen it. I never say too much about it. But I see what they do time and time again. And, you know, he tried really hard, I think, many times over to try to get these people to realize, you know, don't play around the tables, don't throw feed birds under the tables, don't pitch quarters under the table, you know, all this stuff. And I was here for a lot of the stuff. You know, I'd see it, and I never say nothing too much. But, you know, that's kind of where it came to, and it's too bad that this is what's had to be done in order to achieve this. Unfortunately, yeah, it's sad. It's too bad they just couldn't get along and everything works together, but that's just not the way it was working. You know, it's too bad. You know, he didn't really want to do this, but he was kind of forced to a little bit.
I'm sorry.
It's all right.
No. Do you want to say any more?
No, that's all right. I'm just, you know, stating my opinion from what I'd seen, you know, and being on both sides. I mean, I feel for them in their way, you know, what their space, what they want to do, and, you know, his space, what he needs to do, and this, they weren't really respecting that, and he's out here working hard, trying to make something happen, and a lot of people wouldn't want to hang out here with what they were doing, smoking near the tables. I'd hear comments from mothers with children saying things like, oh, you know, honey, I don't want to sit here because these people are smoking that cigarette smoke, and it's just these people don't realize that. It's kind of like they have their own agenda, and it's, I don't know, try to point it out, and it was like day in and day out, day in and day out. And eventually, I think it just came to a point where it had to be done like this, unfortunately.
Let me comment on some of what you're saying.
Sure.
Because, I mean, certainly that's a perspective that you have and that Matisse has as well.
Right.
And other people have
but
it, too.
But I see their perspectives, too.
But, you know, the problem is that when this was actually brought to a point where there could have been a mediation, Matisse and Alibaba refused to do that. That's the point. We set up a whole series of guideline prospects trying to put together suggestions he made, suggestions Ali Kha made, and concerns that the people here had. But he would have none of it. And that's my concern, that instead he unilaterally moved to close off this area, which I think, yeah, it's only one area.
You know, it's true, but it is one of the three main planters in town where people can gather. And I think it's bad public policy to give away this kind of area to private businesses. And also, if you have a problem, to eliminate people from the area is not a good way to resolve the problem, in my view.
I agree. I mean, I think, you know, it's kind of difficult when you get fed up and you're just tired of dealing with it time and time again. I think it's a lot with the people just not respecting the area in itself either. I mean, a lot of littering, you know, cigarette butts all over the ground every day, you know, and still at night they'll go in there and do the same thing still. And I just don't see them really respecting anything themselves, you know. I mean, if there could be a little more respect, then maybe it could be a little more, you know, easier for him to give to them, you know. But when it's constantly always, you know, having to try to take and deal with them on a regular basis.
This is an area that is a quasi-public area, and
right.
So the idea that this is somehow should be run by business decorum rules is, I think, unrealistic, and people who rent here have to understand that.
Well,
you know?
The other area that they rent, I mean, he lost this area, he gave up this particular area here, around here.
But he didn't, because if I stand in this area, he doesn't want me here, he can order me away from here,
really.
So he has the benefit of both areas.
Not really, he doesn't have to, you have the right to stand.
I set up a table here, and I was told I had to move the table over to here.
I mean,
you know?
Of course, because this is obvious that this is the entrance to his business that he's, you know, serving, but I'm talking about back over here where he had his tables and things of that nature.
Right, but you have a 10-foot area around this kiosk where if you sit down, for instance, unless you have your own chair, it's illegal. Now, you see, this is privatization of public space. And there's so little public space downtown anyway. If you stand next to a building and try to play music in front of boarders or in front of, you know, the jeweler, you get a ticket. Not recently. You got a ticket, dude.
And we're listening to a tape from about 3 or 4 days ago at Yuppie Planner, but we have a caller. Hey, caller.
Hey, I just am concerned because I don't think this is totally fair, like, how this is going down on Sushi Now.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like I know, like, from my, like, I'm a member of the business community. I'm part of a worker-owned co-op in Santa Cruz called Peddler's Express, and we've worked with Sushi Now in the past. Like, they've hired us in the past and stuff like that. And I know that he is struggling. I mean, he's not lying. It's not like he gave the city council money or whatever, you know what I mean? He's having a really hard time, like, just staying in business. And putting this particular issue on his shoulders, like, he's trying to figure out a way that he can come up with a solution that's going to allow him to continue to stay in business, you know? And it's not really fair because this is an issue that's been going on for years. It's not like this just developed here at this point in time, you know, because, like, people used to hang out in Cap Garden Pacific, and then Mike Rockin came up with the great idea of putting in those little, like, planter things and then building a whole fucking building and, you know, running into a tax-free organization called UCFC so that, you know what I mean, so they could actually get rid of all the people that were sitting on Cap Garden Pacific, and so they move across the street. And now they're trying to move them out of this area, and they got to find somewhere else. And really, with the city, Santa Cruz, you know, instead of going after Sushi Now, you know what I mean? Because I don't think that particular spot is the best place for people to hang out and play hacky sack and sell pot or whatever. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think that the city of Santa Cruz needs to focus more like in a positive solution to this, you know what I mean? Like, they're always like, bad hippies, bad hippies, bad hippies. Well, they have to come to grips with reality, you know what I mean? Like sometimes I think the city council is more out of touch with reality than any hippie I've ever met in my life. But, you know, and provide something like a pedestrian mall, or, you know what I mean? Like, instead of taking out benches, like, actually make a pedestrian mall or something like that and create spaces that are away from the actual fronts of businesses, you know, and into, the, like, where now cars are driving, you know what I mean? Do some beautification stuff, put in some planters in there and some more benches, and give people that a safe place to be. You know, but as far as, like, going after Sushi Now, I mean, that just seems so unreasonable because this is, like I said, this is, like, years in development, years of the city council, like, basically manifesting this issue, you know, and it's the city of Santa Cruz that's ultimately the protagonist in this particular case, and going after that, you know, and in particular small business owner for trying to stay in business, I think is pretty unreasonable.
Mm-hmm. Well, you want my reaction to that, or?
Yeah, dude. I'll take it off the air, though. I don't want to argue about it.
No problem. Thank you for calling in.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, a lot of the things the caller says are quite true. And it is a city redevelopment agency, downtown association, city council staff, police department agenda here. And it's been the case for the last decade since the, well, even before, but particularly since the mall was destroyed after the earthquake. And I don't mean by the earthquake, I mean by the redevelopment of the mall afterward, where it was straightened out, all the trees were pulled, all the planters were pulled. I've mentioned this repeatedly, but I think it bears mentioning again. My reaction is, I was a regular customer of Matisse, and I would even say a friend of his prior to this whole situation. And Matisse not only has a business on the mall, he's had businesses in Capitola that haven't worked, and he has a business at the Metro. And I'm not saying he's a bad businessman. I can't really comment on that. I like him as a person. I still like him as a person, actually. I mean, it may sound kind of contradictory, but I do. I mean, we obviously, don't get along on this issue. We he's had me arrested, actually, by, and I think, a false arrest, and I've called him on it for obstructing the sidewalk when there obviously was no obstruction of the sidewalk. They haven't proceeded with it, and then we may well do a civil lawsuit on this issue. And the idea is not to drive small businesses out of business. I mean, I like the caller, support small businesses downtown. I mean, the problem is the contradiction that arises when small businesses are used by bigger businesses and bigger interests as part of this campaign to gentrify the downtown and socially cleanse Pacific Avenue. And the caller's comments about, we need to do is set up a plaza, right on. In fact, that's what several activists have suggested, we need to do is actually take back the street. We need to close it off, and if the city council won't do it, then the citizens need to do it. A la People's Park in Berkeley, which they did back in 1968, when they actually established People's Park, which had been sitting there on university land, as sort of a huge swamp, and the community took it over, and now we have a park today because people acted and the community acted.